Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Porto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Porto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Porto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF. We are continuing our Iditarod Musher series, and tonight is Jason Mackey. Hello, Jason. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm the youngest of the Mackey boys. Just turned 41 Monday on the 14th.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I ran Iditarod twice, 2004, my rookie year. Then took a few years off and returned in 08. I had very good runs both years. My intentions one day is to win the Iditarod. Of course, I'm the only one of my dad's boys that has not won it yet. So that's something I strive for every year. That's like I said, I took a few years off and I went to the Quest in 2009 and ended up about 160 miles from the finish line with some sick dogs and dogs in heat. And so it turned out to be kind of a disaster for me, but, you know, just put my head down and keep going. That's all I can do.
Keep plugging away. So when was the first time you were on the runners as a kid?
Oh, I remember running the Kids World Championship in 1984 was my first race. Born in 72, so in 84 I was 12. Started running, training dogs as soon as I could hang on. I must have been around 5 or 6 years old, I guess.
And where was that? Where were you guys living at the time?
Here in Wasilla. Same place I am today, out on Pittman Road. And, we used to be able to run dogs out of here. Now you'd get run over. It's grown up, as we all know, immensely. So dogs are not common in this area anymore. People was wondering what the heck was going on when they seen 40 dogs tied out here. I was on the peninsula there in Kasilof for over a decade. You know, we had great trails. It's a very doggy community. And, I came up here in search of different trails and better training. We always seemed like we always got rain in January. We'd, go to bed New Year's Eve and wake up the next morning with glare ice. And, we're having to truck dogs all the time to the Caribou Hills. So my brother and I, Lance, he actually purchased a cabin there in the hills and just an acre of land. And so we'd spent a lot of our time up in the Caribou Hills. But it was, it was just time for something new. We raised both of our boys down there and brought them up with the fishing and lifestyle as well as the dogs. And my oldest boy, he pursued today with dogs. And my youngest, he's more of a snowboarder, but still active with the dogs. He just don't really like the racing part. But so we come up here. My mom's obviously not getting any younger. She's, she's got a feed store up here, Musher's Feed and Supply, and we're just thankful that she's still plugging along and she's got this store, so it's good for the whole family. It's very family oriented and we're glad to be part of it.
And good for the mushing community. They're having a second feed store right there, pretty much across the street from each other. I know you guys carry a bunch of different stuff that the others don't, so a good compliment to the to the valley here is Musher Feed and Supply.
Yes, for sure. We're my mom's had it going now for 4 or 5 years with odds and ends of things and doing things out of pocket, putting things in the store such as collars and drop cables and stuff as she can. Well, now we've got the full line of Charlie Champagne racing meats, and it's growing every day. I mean, we're able to get more things into the store, and Always open for suggestions from any of the public that, you know, we'd like to see not just mushing supplies and mushing feed, but as well as cattle and horses and chickens. And so that's all in the works, and we will be we'll be expanding next year. By this time next year, we'll have a good-sized business going here. So we're real excited about it. You know, like I said, it's all out of pocket at this moment, and it's we're doing okay.
And that's all you can expect, is kind of plugging away, like you said you were doing on that Yukon Quest in 2009. So let's talk a little bit about something that your dad influenced you with. Of course, everybody knows of the legend that he was in this sport. What were some of the things that he taught you as a youngster on that sled?
You know, I've always, of course, as all young kids do, probably, I would have to think, look up to their dad and their mother. But my dad was a huge inspiration for me. I remember standing at the finish line when he won the race, and it was very exciting to me. I'll never forget that day, and I look back on that day all the time. It's, you know, he always taught us hard work and never give up. And, you know, like he always tells us, it only takes 1 second to win a race, and that's always stuck with me. You know, but he was kind of a, you know, he wasn't here a whole lot. He built metal buildings around the state of Alaska, lots always in the villages and stuff. So, you know, he relied on Lance and I to take care of the dogs. And, you know, he expected hard work, honesty, and, you know, it's made me who I am today. When I turned 12 years old, I had my own trap line that I trapped on foot. You know, it was always it was rewarding for him to see his kids follow in his footsteps, and we all have done that. So, you know, his motto was work hard, never give up, and that's how I was raised. You know, just things ain't always good, you know. But when they're bad, you just try harder, and that's his. That was my upbringing from him. That was, you know, I talked to him yesterday. He's 80 years old now, and you know, right after I did a rod, he's organized a caribou hunt for us up in the Brooks Range, where we grew up from 1980 until 94. He owned Coldfoot Truck Stop, and. You know, that was a complete different lifestyle, you know, but it was good. That's I'm glad I was raised the way I was.
For those folks that are fans of the Ice Road Truckers Show, that's the Coldfoot food truck stop that people stop at, right?
That's correct. It's halfway between Fairbanks and Prudhoe Bay, 260 miles north of Fairbanks. So civilization up there was Coldfoot Truck Stop in a gravel pit. We didn't, you know, I got my high school education from running dogs and breaking trails and trapping. You know, there wasn't much textbook involved. Lance and I went to school with Trooper Merrill's kids, which were quite a bit younger than Lance and I. And, you know, we were in a 12x20 ATCO unit with a wood stove in it. And started school at 8 o'clock in the morning. By 10 o'clock in the morning, we were done and on the trails. So that's you know, I pride myself on that. I'm not a college graduate, but there's not too many people today that can say that they have the knowledge. You know, I can build a shelter out of a tree, or I can build the shelter out of a snowbank and survive. And that. Like I say, I pride myself on the upbringing I had.
Well, I definitely want to get into that in a little bit, and something that your mom told me just the other day when I was over at your guys' place. But I want to get to that in just a second. My first question to you, Jason, is how do you think mushing has changed since you started out as a youngster?
It's done about a 360-degree turn. There's, you know, it used to be, you know, to feed dogs, you cooked fish and rice and put some beef fat in there, and kibble dog food back in the day was pretty much unheard of. I mean, nobody fed kibble, and, you know, the prices of things have obviously went up, inflation with everything as the years go on. But as far as the mushing part of it, you know, it's still, you train your dog team the same. The dogs have basically remained the same, except a lot more knowledge to the mushers now, and dog care has obviously changed. You know, back then, to run booties on them, you know, I remember hours on hours, my mom sitting at the sewing machine cutting up Levi's and making booties out of blue jean material, and then you used a white tape, like a doctor's or a nurse's tape, to tape the booties on. You know, everything's just, it's come full circle, and for the better, obviously, but it's really changed a lot. You know, there, you know, 20 to a 50-mile run in a training run back in my younger days was a long run. Now we're doing 100 and 150-mile runs for a training run. So, you know, with, and you wouldn't be able to do that unless we had the better dog foods and the better dog care. You know, for fat back then, I remember feeding a lot of tallow. You'd just take an ice cream scoop, make a bunch of these tallow balls, and that's what they had for fat. It's, you know, I remember one year Joe Delia saying, I remember when somebody asked me how to worm my dogs, he said, I throw them a piece of old moldy moose hide. Hmm. You know, so it's really changed in that aspect. The dog care is really a, you know, and that's what we all, yeah, everybody has to base themselves on, dog care. That's number one.
How do you think the mushers have changed over all of these years since you were a youngster? You know, a lot of folks come up here thinking about that dream, thinking about running the Iditarod, and they'll move their entire family up in a U-Haul, and the next thing you know, they've got 40 dogs in the yard. How do you think the mushers have changed?
You know, I know a lot of dog mushers, and I've known a lot of them, the same ones, for a lot of years, and, you know, I think that maybe not have changed, but you, for instance, you look at a lineup that's in a race. I used to know them all, and you used to know every dog truck that passed. Until I met you and Michelle, I didn't, you know, I'd see your guys' dog truck, go, who is that? You know, so everybody has, you know, even though you've got half a dozen dogs to 60 dogs, and it's, you know, so there's a lot of new faces. So I think as far as how the mushers have changed, the ones that I know, they haven't changed. They just keep on keeping on. But the new faces, you know, I think it's wonderful. I believe that everybody that lives here should have a dog. You know, I tell people all the time, especially little kids, I work a lot with my mom's classes, and, you know, I really push the issue on, you know, it only takes two dogs to make a team. And so, you know, the dogs, and for me, you know, they really taught me responsibility and hard work. And, you know, some people may not have that instinct of being a dog musher. They want to be part of the dog world, and I think that that's wonderful. But, you know, it's not a five-day-a-week job. It's 365 days a year, 7 days a week. You know, you can't put them up and expect nobody to get loose at 2 or 3 in the morning. And, you know, you got to be there. So there's people that are capable of doing that, and there's people that aren't capable of doing that. So, but I think that as far as just the average people who have dogs anymore are still the same. They, you know, everybody complains of the high prices and this and that over dog food. Well, it's the same way with gasoline. You know, it went up 9 cents over 2 days, I just noticed. So everything fluctuates, you know, we just, it's the game we play, and it's the job we have to do. So, you know, either you're in or you're not. So you know, like I said, the people that I know for years that have had dogs, they haven't really changed. You just got to keep, you change with the times. you know.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this. Since you have been around this your entire life, it's often been said on this show from the veterans down to some of the rookie mushers that there's a possible changing of the guard, especially in the Iditarod with a lot of the youngsters that are coming up. You know, mm-hmm. Dallas, of course, he's been around for a long time, but he's a very young guy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? You know, some of the old grizzled veterans are working their way out while some of these newcomers are really coming up and really showing the sport what it's about.
You know, that, yeah, I agree. You know, Dallas, he's been raised in the dog lot. He's just like us. And, you know, the older guys, you know, such as Jeff King, I'm not pinpointing anybody, but them guys are getting older. We're all getting older. Every year we age. But, you know, when you've done this, here's a good example. My brother Rick ran 29 Iditarods consecutive.
Wow.
Always in the top 10, never out of the top 20. You know, maybe a couple times he may have slipped there and had a scratch in 81 or something. You know, so you race the Iditarod year after year, that's 1,000 miles. Well, you double them miles of training. You double them miles for the musher. And over the years, you know, it beats you up. It's not easy to get up and get moving when it's 40 below, when you're 60-plus years old. It's not easy when you're 25 years old. So as you grow older, it's tougher, you know. And so now we have the younger generation coming up behind us, Pete Kaiser, Mike Williams Jr. Them guys, you know, they get up quicker, you know. It seems to me that age is definitely a factor. You know, Rick Swenson, the guy is just incredible. You know, to run as many Iditarods as him and keep on keeping on year after year, you got to take your hat off to them guys. But it's going to be, you know, they've got so much knowledge. It's hard to beat knowledge at times. But, you know, these young guys, they're hungry for it. The older guys ain't quite so hungry. That, you know, Martin, very good friend of mine, you know, he's very competitive, but he's got a lot of youngsters behind him, you know, that they don't ache quite so bad as he does, you
right,
know.
Right.
So I think the miles over the years, and it's not just the miles of training, but the preparation year after year after year, you know, it takes a toll.
it does, whether you're doing those 1,000-mile races or even just that daily training, like you said, just to prepare for them day in and day out. It's a chore, but it's something that every one of us has fallen in love for. That's why we continue to do it.
You know, that's, and I've always said, people are saying to me many times, you know, well, do you make any money? And, well, you know, I've made some paychecks, but it's not about the money. If it was for money, I would have been out a long time ago. It's the love and the passion that I have for the sport. I believe that every young kid should probably have one or two or 20 dogs. That's just the way I feel. And, you know, this is my life. I wake up every morning. I go to bed every night. And all I have on my mind from when I signed up for Iditarod this year, it's every day, and it drives me and inspires me. I call my dad. I probably talked to my dad more this year. He's in Arizona. I probably talked to him more in the last 2 months than I have in the last 5 years.
Wow.
You know, I call him for advice. I call him for, you know, and he says, son, you know just about as much as I do about it. It's been a long time, and that's, you know, yes, I do, but it's always that encouraging dad talk, you
right.
know. When I ask him something, well, he'll answer me, and, well, yeah, I'm on the same page. You know, the way I feel blessed, my dad, both brother Rick and Lance, all past champions, I've got the best coaches in the world is how I figure. You know, there's nobody that knows better than my three coaches, and you know, I've went to all three of them this year for a schedule. I want to be at the top of, I don't want to be that middle of the pack guy. You know, I know I've got a great dog team. You know, I've never won the race myself, and I've never won the Quest. 2005, I trained the team for Lance that won the Quest. I kept a dog team in training for him, and I did a rod when he got off the Quest. You know, that my whole family calls me the dog trainer.
Speaking of that, if I can chime in just there for a second, I wanted to mention something your mom said. She and I were sitting down at your place last weekend, and she said, you know what, Robert, and then maybe this is just mom talking. She says, that boy of mine out there, he's probably the best dog trainer in Alaska. What do you have to say about that? How can you qualify that for folks that are listening other places? What separates your style from everybody else? What are you doing different?
I don't know what I'm doing different than anybody else that trains a dog, but, you know, and I'm not tooting my own horn. I can train a dog, and I can not only train a dog, but I can train a dog team to win. Like I said, I've never won, but I know what it takes to win. I know what it takes for the dog team to be, do what they look like, how they feel. You know, I can't express enough. Patience with a dog is number one. And dogs that may not make it for somebody else, I can make them. You know, I've got a number of dogs over the years from my brother Lance, my brother Rick, Tim Osmar is a good example. The dogs are wheel dogs, and they just aren't making the cut. And so they hand the dog to me, and that following year, I'll pass them with them dogs in lead, and they just are blown away. How do you do it? Patience. And I think, you know, I have to thank my mom for saying that. But, you know, she told me the other day, son, you're being talked about in Arizona as one of the best dog trainers in the world. And I can't thank people enough for saying that, but it's just what I love to do. You know, all dogs need a chance. There's some dogs that, you know, aren't sled dogs, but if they have any kind of, if they show me any kind of what we're looking for, I can get it out of them.
There you go.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about your dogs. How many dogs do you have in your lot? Maybe a story or two about one of your favorites that you have out there.
Well, I've got, here's a good example for, like what we were just talking about, how to train a dog. Two of my dogs that I got from my brother last year, I got them on the 12th of October. They were 1 year old on the 14th of October. I harness broke them on the 12th of October. I raced them on the 15th of December at the Sheep Mountain. The one now, her name is Crimson. She's my main lead dog.
Wow.
She's finished everything with me from the Northern Lights to the Knick 200. We had a heck of a trail last year in the Knick 200. This dog was just harness broke in October, and on the 7th of January, she led me single lead through the nastiest trail you could imagine to Squintin and back, and never batted an eye. That's what I pride myself on. And so asking me who my favorite dogs are, they're all my favorites, but there's a few that really stand out. She being one of them, and her little brother, his name is Tide, and he's another one that's just amazing. They've never had a bad run, and I think a lot of times, you know, people say, man, how do you connect with your dogs, you know, and your brother Lance, he's got such a bond with his dogs. You know, that's what we do. It's our job, and I put 150% into it day in and day out. And the more time you spend with your dogs, the better off you're going to be.
You know, a lot of old-timers say that to the up-and-comers. They say, you don't have to go out there and run every day. Just go out in that dog yard and spend time with the dogs. Bond with them, get to know them.
That's
right.
Do
you have that same advice?
I do. You know, I personally, I'll go out in the morning and have coffee, sit in the dog lot and have coffee, and maybe when it's time to eat a sandwich, I'll build a sandwich. I don't sit at the table. I go sit at the dog lot and just hang out with them. You know, like you say, it don't always have to be about being on the trail. It's about being with the dogs. And so with that being said, every time that I'm even walking out the door, man, they're tuned into me. They watch every move I make, and as well as do I. I'm constantly, you know, and I can see a lot with a dog on the chain, as well as other mushers. I'm not saying I'm the only one that's like that, and at all. Everybody, all the people that have dogs love their dogs, and I don't know. I can't imagine life without my dogs. That's for darn sure. I've tried it before, and I was very unhappy. I was a very grumpy person, and I had to have my dogs back. So I did sell out after the 2009 Quest. It got to me. You know, I put everything on the line for that race. I left to White Horse with a winning team. And it's kind of like, you know, you pull the string on something that's coming unraveled, and there's no stopping it. It's just, it was out of my control at that time, and that really took a toll on me. I beat myself up over it day in and day out, and it, you know, I had to pick myself up and start over. So I did just that. You know, you asked me about dogs that are in my kennel now. I sold out to my brother and Ryan Reddington, and I went straight back to them two people to get dogs, and Lance gave me back a couple of mine, and I started from there. And Ryan says, "Well, I've got a couple here. They ain't gonna make my team. You know, why don't you give them a try?" He says, "I gotta find homes. They ain't no good." Well, them dogs are in my team today, and I've got a chance at. I've got just as good a chance as winning the Iditarod this year as the next guy. I just I got to get there, and that's the hard part is getting there. You know, sponsors, it's hard to come up with sponsors anymore. You know, the economy has definitely taken a downhill spiral. So, you know, without sponsors and the fans, we certainly can't do this. I've had a tough time this year. I do have some sponsors, but not nearly enough. You know, it's crunch time right now and scraping together change to make sure we got gas money to go train, you know. So...
And you know, Jason, we're talking to Jason Mackey today, Iditarod musher, and probably comes from one of the greatest families in the sport, the Mackey family. Jason, you talked about scrimping together. Just the other day, just like in a lot of mushing families, the old truck broke down. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, that's just another hurdle. I've been on the phone day in and day out. I'm looking for anybody who has an extra truck, somebody that has one for sale. You know, I talked to a guy. He called me from Anchorage Chrysler. He was there. He says, "Jason, I found a truck. Here's the stock number on it. Why don't you call and see if they can help you out? It's only $2,000. Well, I don't have $2 to put towards a truck.
Right.
So, you know, the transmission went out in it. It's a 2001 Ford F-250 V10, and the transmission, just to replace it, or to rebuild it, excuse me, is minimum of $2,500. So I found one at the junkyard, take mine out, give it to him, and he'll sell me one for $1,000. I'm up against it. I don't have the means to buy a vehicle. So I made a call to trying to get a hold of Rod Udd, the owner of Anchorage Chrysler, and see if he would be willing to, the guy that called me about this truck, says, "Hey, I found this truck online or at the parking lot here. Guy wants $2,000 for it." And I said, "Well, I don't know what to say." So hopefully Rod will call me back and help me out if whatever he can do, you know.
There you go. Jason, I don't mean to interrupt, but we're about out of time. Only a half-hour show. It does go very quickly. I do want to put your guys' website out there for your feed store, mushersfeedandsupply.com. Brand-new website for you guys. Jason, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Robert, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And
no problem.
I would like to give a great thanks to my mom and my family. Without them, I could not do this.
Very cool. Kathy Smith is your mom. She is the owner of Mushers Feed and Supply. We'll talk again soon. All right, Jason?
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.